Have you ever wondered how to make sense out of your messy life or how to live in peace in the middle of a stressful world? My name is Jamie Norton, and I want to welcome you to the Making Peace and Beyond podcast. In almost 50 years as a counselor, I have seen a lot of life happen, and this podcast is going to cover all of it. So thanks for joining us while we explore life's struggles and how to live in the peace, joy, and freedom that Christ died to give us. Today we're talking about a subject that is very close to my heart since I'm now old. I have with me April Ferozzi, who I'm going to allow to introduce herself because she has lots of credentials and is an expert on growing old and how to be with people who are growing old and how to grow old successfully if that's who you are too. And hopefully you will be because anybody can die, but only the blessed grow old.
That is true. That is true. Well, I am super excited to be here that you asked me to be here today. So my name, April Suva Sarovi. I am a certified dementia practitioner. I work for a wonderful not-for-profit assisted living called Arden Courts, which is a ProMedica memory care assisted living. And I've been with them for 14 years, and I have the honor to help families and professionals kind of go through this path of some of these difficult diseases and guide them, support them, and put them in better direction. And I've learned a lot over the course of my time there, and I have a lot of resources for people that I can help them with, and hopefully it's successful for them. Sometimes it's not, because life is not always an easy road to go down in some situations, especially when health is involved.
And what we wanted to do with today is to talk about what healthy aging looks like, to debunk some of the stereotypes about what growing old means, but also to really look at what do you do, how do you know when you do need help? How do you know when to call someone in? One of the things about growing old is that there is such a resistance to it in our culture. We have a fear of age. I think all of it boils down to fear, and particularly for people who don't know Christ. I think that's really a really scary thing to think, I'm just going to go away.
Yes.
But you can see it in so many different ways. My favorite unpopular topic is the anti-aging products. I think you listen to that word and it just summarizes what we experience in the whole stereotypic understanding of aging. The word anti-aging is against aging. And we buy these products to stay young, which don't work. I can attest to that. It's like we don't have anti-youth products.
Right.
We don't have anti-middle age products, but we do have anti-aging products. And one of the big reasons to redefine what aging means is that we're living so much longer.
Yes, we are.
In the 1900s, our average life expectancy was 42. In the 70s, it was 70s, in the 70s somewhere. And now 40% of Gen Z and millennials are expected to live to be 100.
Yeah, so that's incredible.
It's very scary because our system is not equipped for that.
Oh, absolutely not.
In so many ways. But so what are you finding in, I'm a lot older than you are, so
no,
I lead the way in this situation. But I worked in aging myself for about 3 years in the early 70s when the Older Americans Act had just been passed, and we were setting up all the senior sites. And in those days, there was just a lot of people, again, didn't live as long, but there was very little attention being given to the aging population. And when somebody did need to be in a facility, they was like a hospital room. They didn't even get to take their stuff. But it's really different in many ways now. There's a lot more going on. So tell me what you're finding as you go out talking to healthcare professionals, as you go out talking to families.
Yeah, well, I definitely think, the perception of what a facility is now is way different than what it used to be years ago. You know, I'll never want to go into a nursing home. Don't ever put me away in a nursing home. If you checked out some of these assisted livings and nursing homes now, they're beautiful. They are not, you know, what they used to be. They're not that necessarily that clinical hospital-like setting anymore. And, it, you know, it's definitely been designed now towards, you know, the current aging population, right? So we got chandeliers. We've got, you know, these, some facilities have pools. Some assisted livings actually have pools in them. And I think that, you know, for the right person, though, you know, in the right part of your aging process, some of those can be perfect, you know. So, you know, it's stereotypically, it's different. At most facilities encourage engagement. They encourage people to, you know, be functional, to participate in outings, activities. And some of them I go to and I'm like, I can move in now. I'm ready. I don't have to cook. I don't have to clean. You're going to do my laundry. Okay.
Have fun. See people. Yeah. I know when we were looking for a facility for my sister, I felt myself thinking, okay, everything is on site. I really like that. But I wanted to go back to addressing one thing that you mentioned. Is community, mm-hmm. You know, because probably the most essential part of anyone's life at any age is to be a viable part mm-hmm. of a viable community, to have connections. And the tendency is to begin to isolate. It sort of feel like you've been put into the lower 40. We are not really good at keeping older people involved in decision making, involved in jobs, involved in, you know, what do you do when you retire? If you have become what you do and then you don't do it anymore, do you even exist?
Right.
And redefining how to stay connected, because that is one of the most essential parts. And because most people don't become physically handicapped or need care. Only 7% of the population prior to age 85 needs significant care. So we have a huge age span between the typical 65, I'm going to retire age, and 85. That's 20 years.
Right.
And there's a whole different understanding of being old, and then there's, now we're getting sections of older, you know, the young old, the middle old, and the old old. And
well, you know that one of the core ways to have a healthy living for your brain is socialization and engagement, right? There's, you know, studies have been shown that, you know, the more isolated you are, the more you're not part of community, the more you're not socializing with others and your peers, you know, you have a greater chance of developing dementia down the road. So it is a key proponent from that age of 65 on up, like, what are you doing to keep yourself engaged? What, you know, are you a part of, involved in church? Are you involved in groups? I'm very lucky. I get to participate in a lot of senior centers, and I get to see those active aging adults. And trust me, it's not, you know, it's not just old people hanging around, just sitting there doing nothing. I remember my mother-in-law who is, oh my gosh, she's, you know, just turned into her 80s and doesn't look it. God bless those Italian genes. And I remember when she first started going to a senior center out by her house, she was like, I'm not as old as these people. I'm not a senior, right? And it's that perception of what is a senior? What is aging? What does it look like? But oh my gosh, she goes on outings. She goes on trips. She goes there all the time. I mean, her social circle is there, and she is, I mean, she's still rolling around on her tractor and doing her grass, you know? It's like, okay, it's keeping her self active.
When I was working in aging, they were just setting up these senior centers, and we didn't have a whole lot of information about how to work with old people. And so I was training director for the Division on Aging, so they had these model senior centers that had been set up all over the country, and they sent me to there to learn, you know, more about how to grow old. And I'm really grateful today, since I am now. But one of the things that was there, they had a lot of the senior citizens in some of these centers were taking care of those who were less fortunate. They were doing the Meals on Wheels. They were doing the visitations. They were doing, but we went to a dance with one of them, and And I danced the alley cat with this man on his 100th birthday. I mean, I met some of the most amazing old people. There was a girl, a woman, Maggie Coon, who was started the Black Panthers in those days, and she was an activist senior citizen. And we went to a formal dinner, and there was a speaker that was like, "Are we going to accept this stereotypical thing about asexuality and aging?" And Maggie stands up in the middle of this formal dinner and says, "Hell no." I mean, she was a character to have. Yeah. And we just had the best time with some of these people that were still so alive and so living, but they had wisdom.
Yeah.
And somebody said, information, young people can have information. There's so much information out there, but it takes age to have wisdom.
Absolutely.
And I do believe that. You have to temper information, you know, and grow into it and really look at how it's applied and what really works and what doesn't. But just some of the beauty and the gifts of people who grow old. Well, probably one of my favorite people in the world was my Aunt Mary C. And she was just alive. I mean, she learned, she traveled, she walked a mile a day, she swam. She played bridge. She dated Sherwood, who was 94.
Oh, God bless her.
She said she was going to die when she was 90, and she died 2 weeks before her 91st
wow.
birthday, and died living alone, active, walking down her hallway. You know, she just never stopped. And she lived until she didn't, which is what I would love to do, you know.
Right. Right.
I want to live until I don't.
Right.
And it's just so, there's such a push. I get a lot of, "You look so good for your age. You're so active for your age." You know, it's like, okay, this is like weird, but it's really not weird. Most people still are.
Oh, yeah. Like, well, but like, there's also something called mental aging, right? So like, how old do you feel? Like me, my oldest is 28. I'm like, he's older than me now. Because mentally, I'm younger than him.
Oh, you're still right? An adolescent, I'm sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So like, it really is kind of like, how old do you feel?
Yeah.
Right? I've heard some people in their, you know, late 50s and early 60s who are like, "Oh, my body, I just feel old. I mm-hmm. feel old."
And that's an expectation. I mean, a social label has with it a certain set of expectations, not just in the culture, but we internalize those expectations. And so we start to cooperate with the expectation. And that's one of the bigger problems we have, because, you know, not only do we get it from outside, but we get it from inside. To somehow we're supposed to be hurting. We're supposed to not be able to think. You know, we're supposed to, everybody forgets stuff, but now I forget stuff and I think, oh, is it happening? You know, I mean, yeah. You don't know.
Right.
You know, but when am I off the bell curve? When do I qualify?
Right.
You know, I mean, there's that. And it's just, it is a mixed bag. And fortunately, knowing some of that is helping me not cater to it. Mm-hmm. So I think we really do need to discuss it.
Yeah, I think, you know, what I've always said, you know, if he ain't dead, he ain't done, right?
You still got
life to live and a reason and a purpose for it. So what is that? And and you know, there is that perception, like when you become a grandma or when you're, you know, and it doesn't matter what age you are. So I'm mm-hmm. a grandma now, but oh, I can't believe you're a grandma. You're too young to be a grandma, you know? So it's like, it's all in perception.
Mm-hmm. That's supposed to be a compliment.
Yes, I understand. I understand and I take it.
Because you've internalized it.
Yes, I have internalized it. But yeah, you know, it's like, it's that whole perception of, you know, and then it's also, I think people also feel that, you know, when you get older, you have to be taken care of. Like, and then that's when you start feeling out of control. Right? Mm-hmm. So people are starting to take like, oh, well, are you sure you're going to be safe to drive? Are you sure, you know, you'll be okay alone? Are you sure you can get to the store by yourself? When you're like, yeah, I can. Now, clearly there are some people who can't. There are some people because of disease processes and other things that they can't. But it
some
is
some of those people are 20.
Yes, that is true. I know some. Not my children, just saying, no.
But it is there is that thing of, can you do anything? I had a client ask me one time. I was flying to North Carolina. I was going to rent a car. I was going to go to like 3 or 4 different places while I was there, pick up my brother and go see my sister and do some things. And my client was looking at me and she said, "Do your children let you do that?" And I'm like, I don't understand this question.
Yeah. What do you mean, let me?
What do my children have to do with it? Yeah. I was kind of taken aback, you know, because that's not something that I think about at this point. And it's not something my children think about. My children would think about it if it was something that they were worried about.
Yeah, right, if they needed to be, right. Yeah, and again, there's situations where it is warranted, like starting to question, are they doing something wrong? Like, is there something going on that we have to worry about their safety? Absolutely. But, you know, it is like, because you know what? It does come down to control. It does come down to independence. You want to have your independence. We're all going to get old. It's going to happen if you're lucky, right? You know?
If you were one of the blessed, I don't think I'm going to be very, I hope I will do it gracefully. I mean, I'm already old, so I've done this much gracefully. But I hope I will do it gracefully. And so that when somebody says, it's time for you to give me your car keys, that will be a test. That is the loss of independence.
Oh, hands down.
That's one of the
hardest things to have taken mm-hmm. away from you.
It is, absolutely. And to not be able to drive. But it's also a safety issue, not just for you, but for everybody else on the road, to be able to say, and so, again, community comes in. I have people assigned in my life to tell me, look, I know I'm probably not going to be nice, but if you need to take my car keys, be assertive. You know, don't back down because I get mad at you. You know, because I want to know. I have a community that loves me enough to tell me the truth. And that is something about community and having people that are like black belt friends that are time tested, mm-hmm. you know, that allow you to be the best version of yourself you can be at the time. And that is what I think all of us want.
We all want it. Unfortunately, not everybody has that.
No, they don't.
Yeah, and you know, and being in the role that I'm in, I see a lot of different family dynamics. I live different family dynamics myself, and I think, you know, when you have that, you're so blessed. And you know, I know we've talked about, you know, being prepared. We talk about, I have my if I die box drawer, you know,
like I call it my death box.
Your death box, right? Yeah. You know, and I think that takes so much burden, like when you're having those conversations with your family knows something changes with me. I can't drive. This is what I want you to say, right? And even if I'm cognitively not able to, you still need to figure it out and you need to say it. And that goes for everything. Everything going on in the future that could happen, this is what I want. This is what I want to be prepared for. You know, if I just went on a trip for work out of town and I told my husband, I said, top drawer, if you need anything, you know, mm-hmm. it's all there. It's all there for you. And so, you know, being prepared and having those conversations is the best thing that you could possibly do. Yeah. But some people, you know, do not want to have those conversations.
A lot of people don't. You know, my friend George Fuller wrote a book called Life Compass Planning. And you know, he talks about intentional conversations and who's going to do what when. And one of the things I tried to do with my death box is to, you know, put in there everything that I thought my daughter would need: telephone numbers, passwords, you know, titles, you know, all of the will. You know, 40% of people don't have wills. I mean, because we are such in denial of death. Like, if we don't talk about it, it won't happen. And so just that lack of preparedness. But I'll tell you, when I had my death box finished, you know, and I go over it with my daughter because things are always changing. I go over it. Do you need anything else? Can you think of anything else we need in here? And I am blessed to have that. But I felt such a relief when I did it. And I didn't expect that. But I was flying back from Korea, and I'd visited my granddaughter, and we're over the Pacific, and there's this loud flash of light, this boom, and the plane starts to shake, and I'm thinking, oh, something just hit us. And then I thought, oh, we're out in the middle of the Pacific. And my thought process was funny. I mean, it was hilarious, because I thought, oh, I wonder where my life jacket is. I wonder if we go to crash. I wonder where my life jacket is. I would be dead by the time I hit the water anyway, so it doesn't matter. And then I thought, you know, I wonder if I'm going to die today. And then I thought, but I have my death box.
Your death box, right?
And then I started just thinking about all the wonderful times in my life and praying, and it was a peace to it. Mm-hmm. You know, even out there. And then the pilot came back on 10 minutes later. He was like, oh, we're going to go keep going. And we got hit by lightning. And I'm like, what else are you going to do?
Right?
We're over the Pacific.
Yeah, what else?
You know, I mean, it isn't going to change. But it was interesting, the comfort.
Mm-hmm. Oh, hands down.
Just a feeling of peace that I wasn't leaving my children unprepared.
Because you know, I've seen it when people aren't prepared.
I've seen it
for families, how rushed they are, how decisions are poorly made, how frustrating, how the anxiety of it and not being prepared and not knowing and not having things in place. And, you know, just, I mean, the things that go into that, not having it, even after the person passes, the trouble that comes after. And it's very peaceful knowing that something happens to me tomorrow, the next day, or even 10 minutes, right? I know that they got it.
One of the things that I ask in Making Peace and Beyond is how many of you, if you were going to die before you got home, are prepared? And hardly anybody raises their hand. I'm like, oh,
except for me.
Yeah, you did.
I did.
I remember that. and they were like, well, why not? You know, because you know intellectually you're going to die, right? But the whole thing is, denial of death is the best way to see what denial itself looks like, because we always think we have more time. I'm not going to do it today. Maybe tomorrow, but not today, you know, I mean, and so because that death box needs to be there for every person of every age.
Oh.
Every adult.
Absolutely. We do Sunday family dinners and with all of our children to get them to come back pretty much every Sunday. And the one Sunday I had their living wills. I had them fill out.
Did you really? You're bad.
I swear. They're like, oh, thanks, Mom. This is fun. I'm like, just get it done. Let's do it, you know, for all of them. Because, I mean, you just don't know. You really don't.
And when you do know, it's too late.
Oh, yeah.
When you do know, it's too late. So going back to just talking about, how would you know when someone does need to call for an assessment, or somebody needs to? I mean, what are the kind of things that you say to healthcare professionals when you're talking and training them?
Yeah. So in regards to like recognizing when something else, this isn't normal aging kind of deal. Yeah. So you know, there's like warning signs to look for, right? There's things that when it's regarding dementia, and it could be so many other things. And I always, whenever I do have conversations with professionals or families about it, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean it's dementia, because there are multiple other things that can be going on with someone who's aging: medication, urinary tract infections, other infections going on. So it doesn't necessarily have to mean it's dementia, but it could be. You know, in that process. And, you know, as we age, the highest risk of developing some of these diseases is age. And so, you know, is someone, you know, starting to become more forgetful? We are going to become a little bit more forgetful as we're aging. Our brains start shrinking. And so, you know, connections are changing. But what's not normal is not remembering something that happened 10 minutes ago, maybe not remembering a person's face, not remembering what to do if I see a cup or if I see my car keys. What am I supposed to do with the car keys? Mm-hmm. I can say they're car keys, but I don't know what to do with them or what they're supposed to do, right? So, you know, some like, or repeating stories over and over again, not remembering that they just told you the story multiple times. then maybe not caring less about how they're dressing, their hygiene, you know, maybe wearing the same things over and over again. If they're, if they're coming to church and just, looking disheveled, more, not something out of the norm, that wouldn't be. Maybe more isolating, depressed, like affect, maybe some changes in personality as well. Again, some of these things can mimic other things in life, right? But if you start seeing it more, it's no matter what you see, whenever you're starting to see changes in your loved one, you should always, have the conversation with them, or, if you're able to go to the doctors or reach out to their doctor, whatever's going on, or if there's a spouse involved with them, we're noticing some changes, what are you seeing? Those types of things that are really, that really show and really visible when you start seeing those changes in them.
So to take one step up and say, okay, we're seeing a constellation of things here that say something is going mm-hmm. on. We don't know if it's dementia. We don't know if it's a urethra. We don't know what right. it is, but what we do need is somebody who's more schooled in this or some testing done to find out exactly what we're looking at so that we can do the best response.
Right. Correct. And so from that point, I always recommend that you see your doctor, recommend a doctor. Now, I think geriatricians are great because they specialize in that aging population. And then if it needs to go beyond the geriatrician, then, they can direct you to a neurologist, psychiatrist, on up to, in regards to trying to pinpoint what exactly it is. But, now that's talking about someone who's actually going to go to the doctor. Right.
This is could be a very small percentage of
yes,
people, actually.
Exactly.
Especially if they're men.
Exactly. So a lot of times what ends up happening, and we get calls all the time where, I lived it. I had a father who refused to go to the doctors. He was the most stubborn man, but he knew what he wanted. He knew what he wasn't going to do. We tricked him. We ended up getting a doctor to come, a home visit doctor to come in, so he didn't have to go out. So there's things like that you can do, right? You can bring in a doctor into the home and you can kind of bypass that whole having to go out. But there's a lot of times that it gets way past that point of, doing something beforehand or, getting a correct diagnosis or because that person is just stubborn in life. They just won't go to the doctors. They're paranoid of doctors. And then they have this disease and they're so far progressed that these families are at a loss of what to do at that point. And it gets to a point a lot of times where they end up having to call 911 because of a situation. Maybe it's paranoia. Maybe it's escalated to just severe changes in mental status. And that's how they end up getting into the system to finally see a doctor that way.
Yeah. One of the more common things I see coming into my office is adult children who are somehow taking responsibility for caring for parents. They're giving up their life. It's one of the hardest jobs in the world is caretaking of anybody. But they're gradually taking over and trying to make the person safe to live in their home, to make them safe to go to wherever they're going. So they're taking them places. They're going in, they're doing things and trying to surround them in a way that doesn't let them fall. But they're taking the responsibility, but they don't have the authority. One of the things that I talk about sometimes is you have as a child needs a parent. And then there's a point where you have an adult-adult relationship where you become an adult in the presence of your parent. In other words, you can set boundaries, you can set limits, you have your own family. They don't get to just charge into your house and go into your fridge, necessarily. But you can have an adult-adult relationship because down the road you may need to have that parent-child relationship with your parent. And so if you haven't established the adult-adult relationship, and you're trying to have the responsibility of a parent from a continuing child position, that is not going to work.
Oh, it's not going to work.
It will be havoc on everybody. And everybody will grow resentful and hateful. And there'll be all kinds of arguing and fighting. And so it's really important for you young people out there that may be listening to this to establish that adult-to-adult relationship with your parent, you know, while they are still able to function completely. Right. And to have that so that if there is an assumption of responsibility, you make it very clear. If I'm going to assume responsibility for who you are in this, 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 and this ways, then I'm going to take authority over that. You know, I'm not going to be trying to separate because it won't work.
Right. And then it also opens up some trauma and wounds if that haven't been dealt with too, mm-hmm. that can also cause major issues in caregiving as well.
Right.
If those haven't been
for
resolved.
For instance, if you grew up with an alcoholic parent and you've never dealt with the resentment and anger you felt about having that alcoholic parent, or you had a parent who wasn't available to you or was abusive, and then you became an adult and had your own life, but then all of a sudden the caretaking of that parent, because as children, you already gave up your needs, your limits, and your feelings in deference to that parent just to protect yourself. Well, now you've got to give up your needs, limits, and feelings to take care of them. There is that resentment from childhood can easily pop over into the resentment of adulthood.
Oh, absolutely.
And that can become a really big traumatic opportunity for learning, because I think all problems are opportunities for learning.
They are.
it's like... You know, so you will have an opportunity to learn and to now be able to exercise your needs, limits, and feelings that maybe you didn't ever learn how to do. But you're probably going to need some help with that. So it's not a bad idea to get some counsel or to get into a group that can talk about, like Making Peace and Beyond, mm-hmm. what happened to you as a child, to be able to reach that level of forgiveness that goes with really understanding that you were born into a story and you're a part of that story and you can change your script. You know, you can grow up within the story, you know. And
I agree completely. I've lived it. I completely agree. Yes.
It is. But I watch people try to continue to give up their needs, limits, and feelings, you know, for, you know, again. But they're so angry.
Oh,
so
yeah.
angry.
And, you know, and you're not going to be good for your loved one. You're not going to be good for yourself, and you're not going to be good for your family and in that situation, you know. And when dementia is involved, you're dealing with, you're never going to get closure in anything because you're dealing with a brain that's not working. You're dealing with a brain that has reasoning and judgment issues and understanding issues. And there's no way you can go back in time from that, you know? And so, it's a challenge. So when you're, you know, as a caregiver, support is probably the biggest thing can do. So whether it is like if making peace is needed, if any other type of support, counseling, support groups, because guess what? The statistics are high in regards to dementia, and there are lots of other people living your same story. And so support groups through the different organizations out there that of the different diseases, including Alzheimer's and FTD, frontal temporal degeneration, Lewy body dementia. Each one has their own organization and support groups. So buildings, facilities, like we have our own support group as well at each of our locations. And so it's out there.
Yeah.
I mean, there are so many resources available, and knowledge is power when it comes to that.
And you don't have to be ashamed.
No.
You know, because it is hard. It's going to interrupt your life. It's going to do a lot of things. And there's a stark similarity between having a parent who is alcoholic and being unable to think, unable to make decisions, unable to do the right thing, and a person who has got dementia. I mean, it's kind of like more of the same. Mm-hmm. Even if the person had a lot of recovery in the middle, you know, it brings up old things. If you don't deal
right.
as the caretaker with your whole history with that person, you
right.
know, it's really important. And, you know, like I say, you know, most people need care only a couple of, mm-hmm. you know, a few months before they die. I mean, most people are able to continue to function at a adequate or superior level. Because I really think that I did a thing recently on putting the gold back in the golden years, because I think we've just gotten to be these frumpy old people sometimes, and we've stopped growing, stopped. I think that's the other thing. Keep your brain alive as much as you can, and you know, live, learn new things.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you don't use it, you lose it, and that goes for your brain.
That's right. Exactly. So you have to keep it active and keep learning and keep getting curious about what's next, what's life, and doing that kind of thing. But to really say, you know, these are the best times, because you don't have to raise kids. You don't have to build a profession. You know what you like and what you don't like. Hopefully you have found a close relationship with God, because without it, this is hard years, you know, and to be able to utilize the gifts and the wisdom that you've learned over the years, because, you know, we've lost the ability. I think computers really messed it up. I mean, the whole internet situation destroyed sitting at elderly people's feet and listening. And as a child, that's one of the things we did. I mean, I'm old enough to have been pre-computer, pre-internet, and one of the things we would do is go and visit the old people, mm-hmm. and they'd feed us milk and cookies, and we'd listen to their stories about what it was like to be old and what it's like now and what life happens and, you know, different parts of life. And there was a lot of just really just very warm, gentle stuff in that. I mean, a lot of good memories about that. You know, my grandmother lived right across the street, and she was so important to me because my home life was pretty unpredictable at times. And she was a safe spot for me, you know, and I loved listening to her stories. And I look now at the world as it is. I mean, it's totally different than the way it was, but God is still the same. Life still has the same issues in it. It really hasn't changed that much. The wrappings have changed,
right.
But life itself hasn't changed. And our needs haven't changed. Who we are as human beings is still the same, you know. And I find myself living out of the center of my life much more. You know, there's a part of you that is that 14-year-old, mm-hmm. is that 4-year-old. I mean, we can transport ourselves back to any age, and we're the same person watching that person. I mean, it's not any older now than it was then, but there's something similar. I think this is our soul, our spirit running through all of life. And the experiential stuff just spins. And I find myself more and more living out of the central part of my life, the spiritual part of my life, much more than the experiential part
right.
of my life.
Right.
And you get over the drama.
Yeah.
I mean, life happens. You know, I mean, life happens. And it happens pretty much the same as it always did, you know, the personal part of it.
And that's your wisdom, like, right? Wisdom, as we get older, you realize what's important, what matters, you know, that wisdom. You know, my grandmother always says, she said this since I can remember, and that was, you know, getting old is for the birds. And I'm always like, what does that mean, right? And it's kind of, and basically what it means is like getting old is worthless. And I'm like, yeah, but it's not. Like, I'm like, you know what? Like, you know, and I tend to live very, you know, glasses half full. Like, hey, we woke up this morning. Great. What are we doing today to make this matter? And, you know, and that's where.
Well, I like you.
Thank you. Thank you. I try. I have my moments. But, you know, she, you know, it, and God bless her. She's still with us, and she is feisty as can be still. And, I am seeing that she is getting more peaceful now. You know, my family wasn't necessarily a very faithful family growing up. You know, we believed in God but I think, you know, with that, with time, with age also comes that. And I find it so interesting. One of the programs that I do, is Dementia, God, Faith is Not Forgotten. Right. And so, you know, faith is with us always. And even when the brain changes, even when, because it's a spiritual thing, like you were mm-hmm. saying, right? It's a spiritual connection and not necessarily a mind connection. And you know, I had one family I remember was saying, you know, my dad was an alcoholic and he did not find God till later in life. I'm worried that with his dementia, he is going to forget that. He's not going to remember that God's in his life. And, but I've seen miraculous things when it comes to with faith and it's still there because it's that spiritual connection that we have no matter what age we are, no matter if dementia is involved. And that, you know, to me, that's growing old gracefully, right?
Yeah, I think you just hold everything more lightly.
Yeah.
You hold everything more lightly because you realize everything here is temporary. And you value the things that are most important, like your love and relationships, like the creation, you know, just the beauty of everything that we have available to us. And it's, you know, to hold on to, you become closer to God, I think, in that. I hear stories sometimes, one in particular where a person close to us was dying and hadn't said anything or really responded much in a couple of days, you know, and his family started singing Jesus Loves Me, and he started singing. Yeah. I mean, it registers at a whole different level.
Oh, absolutely.
A whole different level. I mean, it's so important. And that's a part of what aging is about really looking at what is life really about. It's about loving others and loving God. Loving God and loving others. And if we can remember that, and we will, you know, if we end well, then that's all we need to know.
Yeah. Every day I drop my son, my 11-year-old, off at school. I love you. Have a great day. Be like Jesus. That's what I say every day. He's like, okay, Mom.
Okay, I'll do it. It's so good to have you here. I love it.
Oh, you know,
we'll have to do this again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, just remember, it's, you know, we're all blessed to get old. We're all blessed if we have that opportunity.
And yeah, it is.
Of each day.
Thank you so much for joining us today. If you enjoyed this conversation, please like and subscribe, leave a review, tell your friends, and join us on all of our social media channels. Thanks again, and God bless you.